This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Lots to go over, lots to do. Busy, busy Thursday in the NHL. And, of course, the Rangers-Islanders game was maybe the game of the night. Rangers win 3-2. They get a late goal from Kreider on the power play. Islander fans screaming about the Brassard cross-check that led to the power play. But here's what it comes down to. Close games, Islanders went 0 for 5 on the power play. The Rangers went 2 for 5 on the power play. Islanders have to do a better job of scoring on the power play. When you get 5 opportunities, and it's not like the Rangers' kill has been great all year, when you lose by a goal and you don't get a power play goal on 5 opportunities, and the Islanders have really struggled to get power play opportunities, and you get 5 of them in the game, you got to be able to cash in on one of them, and that cost them, so they couldn't even get a point. Now 0-2 against the Rangers. They'll play again on Tuesday at Madison Square Garden, and the final game of the regular season will be February 25th back at Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Just the atmosphere was tremendous. The players even commented after the game. I was here in the studio in New York, so I couldn't be at the game live, but first time since March 10th of 2015 that the Rangers played a game at the Coliseum, and there was just a lot of energy. Boy, it would be great to see these two teams play in the postseason, but the Rangers have to get there first. But aside from the game, and we'll probably get to a few of your comments when we do Twitter at the end of the podcast, is what these two teams need going forward. The Rangers are 6 points out of a playoff spot, but they've got teams to climb over. And with so many three-point games of the NHL, it's so hard this late in the season to make a move unless you're going to rattle off 5, 6, 7 straight. You go 8, 9 without a loss in regulation. Rangers haven't been able to do that all year. And they're going to get to the deadline in about 5 weeks, and they're going to have to make a decision on Kreider. They're going to have to make a decision on Smith. They're going to have to make a decision sooner or later on this three-headed monster in goal. You figure likely Georgiev will be the one to get dealt because Hank's got a no-movement clause. Shesterkin is the future. So Georgiev is likely going to get traded. So they're going to have to make some decisions that can affect the bottom line moving forward after the trading deadline. So say the Rangers are a few points out of a playoff spot. Are they going to stick with the players that they have, run the risk of losing them and not making the playoffs? And I don't know if they want to do that. I don't think they looked at themselves as a playoff team this year anyway. I think they realized it was going to be a couple of year rebuild before they got back into the postseason. You probably don't want to stray from that. So I would think likely the Rangers are on the outside looking in. So Kreider, I think, will get dealt. Smith will get dealt. You're hearing rumors because Toronto is so desperate for a backup goaltender, and with no cap space, and with Georgiev making less than $900,000 this season, that Georgiev would be a good fit in Toronto. And many are talking about, because of the need for a blue line help with Toronto, that maybe Smith can go, that there could be a bit of a blockbuster. Could you pry offense away from Toronto because of their cap problems? Can you get a Kapanen? Can you get a Nylander in a big deal? Is that something the Rangers want to do? And we've talked about this before on the podcast. Before you get giddy about the Rangers cap space, you've got restricted free agents you have to deal with, like D'Angelo, like Fast. So you're going to have some money left over if you're going to want to keep those guys. And certainly a lot of their restricted free agents are guys that you're going to want to keep. So that's the Rangers situation. For the Islanders, they need scoring help. I think their system works. I think their goaltending works. But they're going to come up short goals. And they can't make a run against the Pittsburghs of the world, even though they beat them last year, against the Washingtons of the world, unless they can score some goals. This is a league now where you're going to need to produce offensively. They can have a system-oriented, low-scoring game. They can do that. They can win that way. They proved it last year in the series against Pittsburgh, but you saw the series against Carolina. They came up short goals, and they weren't able to advance. So who do you get? Tomas Tatar is the name you hear from Montreal. He's got 17 goals, having an impressive season on a lousy hockey team. Do you go out and get Pajot from Ottawa? That would be a very interesting piece. I think he would fit well. Lou will make a deal. He didn't last year because I don't think he felt that he had a team that can compete for a Stanley Cup. If he believes they have a team that can compete with Washington and Pittsburgh in their own division, with Boston, with Tampa Bay, if you want to start talking about getting to the conference final, making a run to win a cup, Lou has shown the history of making those moves. We've talked about it before. Gilmore, Anderchuk, McGillney, If you go back to Neil Broughton back in 95 when the Devils made that deal, seemed quiet at the time, scored some big goals on their run to a Stanley Cup championship in 1995. Lou will make those deals. I think the Islanders are still a very good team that's right now short offense. We'll see if they can take advantage of that. Flames with a big win, 2-1 over the Maple Leafs. And what I'm reminded there as I take a look at the standings, just how wide open this Pacific Division is. And it seems like they have a different first place contender every single night. Remember, Vegas was there, then Vegas dropped four in a row. They did win last night in Peter DeBoer's return. I thought that was pretty significant. But for the most part, you look at this division. Calgary's now in first because they played one less game than Arizona, although both teams have 26 wins, both teams have 57 points. Vancouver's in third, only a point back. Vegas is only a point back, although they played two more games than Vancouver. One more game than Calgary, same amount of games as Arizona. Edmonton is right there. Edmonton is only 2 points off the pace with a game in hand on Calgary. Two games in hand on Arizona. Then it drops off. San Jose, Anaheim, and Los Angeles are out of it. So right now, Calgary, Arizona, Vancouver are your top three in the Pacific Division. Vegas and Edmonton are your wild card teams. So you've got a team in Edmonton that right now sits in that final playoff spot that very easily can win a division and have home ice advantage in the first two rounds of the playoffs. Now, I do think that the winner of the Central will end up being the team with the home ice, and right now that's St. Louis with a 10-point bulge on Colorado. St. Louis has just been unconscious, 6-2-2 in their last 10, completely unbeatable at home. So that Pacific Division is just so wide open. So every point you can get if you're the Flames or anybody in that division is going to be pretty significant. And that was huge for that team to be able to come away with that. Same thing with the Golden Knights. You go to Ottawa, you got to win. Pete DeBoer's debut as head coach, he went out there and he got the job done. That was a huge, huge win for the Vegas Golden Knights. They needed that and they got it. So they were able to keep pace there. And you know, the Coyotes and the Oilers, that'll be coming up on Saturday. That's going to be a huge game. A lot of these teams are going to be playing each other down the stretch. So right now I look at the Pacific Division as maybe the most interesting division in the NHL. Now, the Metro is very interesting too, but there's separation. Washington has a 6-point lead on Pittsburgh. They've got a 9-point lead on the Islanders. Even though Pittsburgh and the Islanders have games at hand, Washington is a proven commodity atop the Metropolitan Division. The Atlantic Division right now, as of right now, even though Tampa had a tough loss last night, Boston's got the 8-point advantage there in the Atlantic Division. And as I mentioned, in the Central, St. Louis is up by 10. So right now, that Pacific Division, 1-5, is just so, so wide open. Should be a lot of fun down the stretch of the season for sure. All right, going back to last night, Washington picks up a win over New Jersey. Corey Schneider back up from the minor leagues. Really didn't stand a chance. Washington is just so much better than New Jersey. But the story in this one, Alexander Ovechkin, 3 goals, 25th time in his career in which he has picked up a hat trick. And now he is just 1 goal shy of Mario Lemieux for 10th all-time in goal scorers. And this guy, 34 years old, he's not going to be 35 years old until September. So going into next year, he's going to be 35. This is a guy that's going to climb up those standings. Can he catch Wayne Gretzky at 894? That's going to be a tall order. But he should be able to, at least this year, pass Mario Lemieux, pass guys like Gardner. He is going to get 800 goals. I think that's pretty much a lock for me. Unless he gets hurt or decides to, you know, pull a retirement early, he is going to have 800 goals. Could he get the extra 94? That's going to be tough, but you get lights like last night, gets a hat trick. He's got 31 goals this season. You know, so all the talk is about what McDavid's done, what Dreisaitl has done, what Panarin has done from a point standpoint. And, of course, Pasternak leads the league in goals. But Alexander Ovechkin, yes, sometimes he disappears and won't do anything for a week. Yeah, he irritates people not playing in the All-Star game for sure. But 31 goals, he is just an unbelievable presence now. 689 goals in his career, and there's a very good possibility he'll be right up there with Howe and Jagr in the top three all-time goal scorers, and he probably, more than anybody else that I can think of right now, can be a legitimate threat to challenge Wayne Gretzky, a record we thought would never have a chance to fall. The Wild slow down the Tampa Bay Lightning by the final score of 3-2. So that was a pretty significant win for the Wild, trying to hang in the playoff race. Kucherov picks up his 20th. Matter of fact, he had two goals on the night. So Tampa's getting better. Tampa's still very dangerous, but they're giving a little bit more leeway as far as the division's concerned to the Boston Bruins, who had four straight goals in their victory over the Pittsburgh Penguins. So Crosby's out 28 games, right? Scores 4 points in his return against Minnesota. And then he scores last night to give Pittsburgh a 7-0, his seventh of the year, to give them a 1-0 lead 24 seconds in. And then it is Boston the rest of the way. Corrali, Lindholm in the first period makes it a 2-1 game. In the third period, Bergeron is 20th. Marchand is 21st of the year. Halak makes 29 saves. As you know, Rask has been placed on IR. I think he'll be back and be okay. But Boston's still able to survive with a legit goaltender as a backup in Halak. So I think everything's fine as that's concerned. Blue Jackets, a huge win over the Carolina Hurricanes. The Blue Jackets now have won four straight games. They find themselves now the last wild card team in the Eastern Conference, very quietly going about their business. I think it'll be fun to watch them Sunday. I'm going to be at the Garden for the Rangers, the Blue Jackets game. The Blue Jackets will play the night before at home against the Devils. So they could actually add to their lead in the last wild card spot before they play the Rangers. But the Blue Jackets hot. Foligno scores late in regulation. It's a tough loss for Carolina as they had a point in their back pocket and they squandered it by at least not forcing overtime. So Carolina's your first wild card. They've got the tiebreaker over Columbus because they've got three more regulation wins. So they're 27-18-2 to Columbus's 24-16-8, but both have 56 points. Now, there's a big difference. Carolina's plus 24 goal differential. Columbus is a plus one. Now, what that means to me is that Carolina is the better team. They played one less game than Columbus. Columbus has been very streaky, for sure. A lot of overtime losses for them. They have had eight losses either in overtime or the shootout, Columbus. And that's a big deal when you consider Carolina's only had two and none at home. So I do think Carolina's the better team, but Columbus is right there. Philadelphia was in a tough spot last night. They lost to Montreal. They had to play the night before in St. Louis, travel back home, take out a Montreal team that struggles in Philadelphia. But that was just a tough turnaround. No Hart, obviously, because he's out for the next month. So Philadelphia loses. They've got 56 points as well. But they also played one more game than Carolina has, the same amount of games as Columbus. They've got one more win, but the tiebreaker there again is the losses, only 16 losses to Philadelphia, 17. Florida gets their win last night. They score four unanswered goals and hold on for the 4-3 win over the Kings. So Florida's right there as well, just a point out of the playoff spot. Buffalo's won three in a row, so they're still heard from. Not sure they're a great team. Minus six goal differential, but the points don't lie. 51 points, so they're 5 points out of a playoff spot. So things are very much wide open in the Eastern Conference, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun down the stretch.
Don LaGreca's Friday Top 5.
Yeah! All right, we didn't get a chance to do that last week because I was unable to get a podcast together because I had to travel to St. Louis. So it was a little crazy, a little kooky for sure for me, but I was able to at least articulate enough to get it together here on a Friday and get back to the Top 5, and we start from the bottom.
Number 5.
Well, even though they lost last night, it is time to start recognizing the Tampa Bay Lightning. The best team from last year is now back in the top 5 for the first time this year. Again, they lost last night, but 8 wins in their last 10. Kucherov has gotten hot. 2 goals last night in the loss. This team is starting to put it together. Well-rounded scoring. Even Colburn's contributing offensively. We talked about it so much on this podcast of how different Tampa is when Hedman's in the lineup. A lot of their struggles, of course, last year in the playoffs against Columbus. This year early on, no Hedman. Tampa's putting it together. I've got them at number 5.
Number 4.
Well, the Boston Bruins, I think, dropped down to 4. Injuries have a lot to do with it. Very average this last 10 games at 5-2-3. Big win last night. They lose Rask, but I think Halak is a very capable backup. He's been there. He's done that. He's played in the postseason. That should not be any reason for a fall off. Pasternak continuing to score at an amazing clip, plus 34 goal differential. So a little bit slow over the last 10 games. I drop Boston down to number 4.
Number three,
welcome to the top three, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Yes, Sidney Crosby returns. 5 points in the two games since he's been back. They lose Gensel, so what? Earlier in the year, they lost to Tang, so what? Yevgeny Malkin might miss a little time? Doesn't matter. Murray could miss a few starts? Doesn't matter. Team's exceptionally well coached. Deep, plus 33 goal differential. Win on the road, win at home. Unbeatable in the shootout. 7-2-1 in their last 10. Pittsburgh is in the conversation as the best team in the National Hockey League, and the stats show it. They're only 6 points off the pace from Washington, who is the number one team. And that is a team that has been decimated by injuries. And if they get everybody healthy, yeah, I know a lot of people get disappointed with this because they might be sick of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And we're very happy they were knocked out of the first round last year. But Pittsburgh is very, very dangerous.
Number two.
I'm going to go with the Washington Capitals. A couple of wins in a row. Ovechkin with a hat trick, plus 31 goal differential. Samsonov has been a very good backup to Braden Holtby. TJ Oshie getting a chance to get into the All-Star game in St. Louis. That was a good call from last week. They are the best team in the National Hockey League point-wise with 69 points. 15-5-4 at home. 17-6-1 on the road. They do have an occasion to take a nap now and then. You go back to last Saturday. How do you lose to the Devils at home 5-1? Guess it does happen. They don't have to worry about it. Nice cushion in their division. They don't need to win the division to feel like they've got to make a run. That cup is alleviate them a lot of the stress and problems. I've got them as the second team in the league.
Number one.
Yeah! Got to see them live for the first time. This St. Louis Blues team is scary. Scary good. Much like Pittsburgh, they're doing it with a lot of key pieces out of the lineup. They've got no Tarasenko. Blaze been out of the lineup. He was big in the postseason for him last year. Gunnarsson out of the lineup, and yet the team has been able to possess the puck. They win faceoffs. They're big. They're thick. They're physical. They've got speed. They can score on all four lines. Very, very dangerous team. Very impressed with them when I saw them last week. The only team in the NHL right now that can call themselves the defending Stanley Cup champions. They're plus 26 goal differential. Only team in the Western Conference with 30 wins. They're only 1 point off the pace for the best record in the National Hockey League. They've just been unbelievable this year. Only 4 regulation losses at home, which is terrific. Only 6 on the road, which is also amazing. They've got a problem like Boston, right? Can't win in the shootout. But they've only got 3 losses as opposed to Boston 7, so it's not that big of a thing. 6-2-2 in their last 10. I've got the St. Louis Blues as the best team in the National Hockey League. All right, let's close out the week with your tweets. At Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. Let's go to Troy. Do you think Georgiev would be a good fit in San Jose? Dell seems like the logical out in that case. Does Jones' term and salary, is that a significant obstacle? I think the significant obstacle is I just don't know why you make that deal if you're San Jose at this particular point, because you're going to have to give up, I would think, something fairly significant. I understand they need him, but I don't know if San Jose has the pieces necessarily that the Rangers would be interested in. The number one problem for the San Jose Sharks has been their goaltending. Jones and Dell have not been good, but as we've watched the Sharks this year, they've got other problems besides the goaltending. They've got a total fix that they need to get into. So sure, I think San Jose would want Georgiev. I'm not sure that necessarily would be the destination. And do they have the pieces that the Rangers are going to want? JR says perhaps it was emotion of winning on Long Island, but the Rangers win was more satisfying and impressive than it happening at the Garden or the throttling at the Garden. They showed true character battling through continued penalties, not to mention moving 2 points closer. Your biggest takeaways? My biggest takeaway from the Rangers Islanders game last night was the power play, which has struggled at times with the Rangers going 2-for-5. The kill went 5-for-5. I thought Georgiev clearly has the Islanders' number. He's now 4-1 with a goal against average that's under 1.5. Save percentage that is .950, which has been unbelievable. He made 38 saves again last night. So those were my takeaways. I think the Islanders are a terrific team and probably the better team. But one thing I will say about this Islanders team that maybe could be a little disconcerting for Islander fans and management. They've played a lot of emotional games last year This year, they kind of came up short. I mean, that was an emotional game at Madison Square Garden. They got destroyed. That was an emotional game in their own building, and they obviously didn't get destroyed. They could have very easily won the game, but they lost. They want to be able to ratchet it up that emotion a little bit. Even though they're the better team, they're still, they still need to play with that mentality that they're the second team, because that's what they are from a popularity standpoint. A lot of fans coming into their building, they need to play with a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder. I felt like they walked in as the better team, and they've had the Rangers number over the last couple of years, especially at home. Things are a little bit different now. This Rangers team's got a lot of moxie. I'm not sure the Islanders necessarily matched that at times when it was important to, but my biggest takeaway has been, you know, the power play. You lose a one-goal game and you go 0-for on the power play and you give up two power play goals, that's the reason why you lose the game. Chris says, hey, Don, big fan. Do you believe in swallowing your whistle late in the third? Also, I despise embellishment calls, but do you think the call on the Brassard should have been made? Listen, you look back earlier with the Panarin. He got called for a dive. How often in your mind's eye, think about it, does a team get called for embellishment twice in a game? It's something I think officials are loath to do. And because they had done it already in the game, and they did it in the third, were they going to do it again in a close proximity? I just don't think that's going to happen. I'm not condoning swallowing the whistle. I believe a penalty should be a penalty. I don't like the whole let them play, because then it can kind of get out of hand a little bit. But I do think officials are very hesitant to call embellishment penalties. And since Panarin got tagged with one earlier in the third period, were they going to do it again? I know Islander fans are ticked off about giving up the power play goal late, but come on. You know, you really don't have a kick coming when you allow two power play goals. You don't have to give up the power play just because you committed the penalty. And the 0-for that you took on the 0-for-5 cost you the game. So I understand Islander fans being frustrated, but at the same time, just ask yourself, I'm asking the question legitimately, how often does a team get tagged with two embellishments in one game? And that just tells me that officials don't want to have to do that, especially if it's going to decide the game. And you could have made the case, too, if you want to be a Ranger fan to complain, was Kreider pushed into the goaltender on the goaltender interference? Now, that didn't lead to a goal, and I guess credit the Rangers for killing it off. But was that necessarily a penalty, or was he driven into the goaltender? So I don't want to get into the whole official stuff. I know a lot of Islander fans are going to do that, but, and then this is what Ryan's going to do. Hey, Don, still very angry at last night's outcome. Anger at the Islanders' power play is the least scary thing in the NHL, and the poor officiating was the barely cross-check ill-advised, sure, but that was a textbook dive by Kreider, and they were doing it all night. Plus, for the refs to let go all that they did to make a call like that in that moment is a disgrace. Let them play. I understand you're looking at it through blue and orange glasses. I can talk to a Ranger fan that's going to look at it through blue and red glasses. But, hey, it comes down to you got to do a better job. At the end of the day, both teams had five power play opportunities. One scored twice. The other one didn't score at all. You don't have a kick coming. Mike says, hi, Don. What is your opinion on Kaapo Kakko? I watch the Rangers as much as possible and still learning the game of hockey. But to me, Kakko just doesn't seem confident, hardly shoots at net, and just doesn't seem to have that flair. Thoughts? Well, he's 18 years old. And I know some 18-year-olds jump right onto the ice and fly. But you look at what's happening with Hughes in New Jersey. It's kind of a similar situation, right? Although it's worse, I think, for Kakko than Hughes, because Hughes is a North American player. Where Kakko's an international player, he's got to get used to the ice. And I've had people tell me, you know, he's homesick. It's tough. 18-year-old being thousands of miles away from home. Now, he's used to playing internationally, but this is where he is. So, you know, when he gets the flu or he gets sick or he gets lonely, you know, we all get those feelings and we feel comfortable when we're in our own home. This is an 18-year-old living in North America for the first time, playing on the NHL level, playing on an ice surface that he's not used to, doesn't have the room that you usually get when you play in the NHL, and he's making those adjustments. I give the Rangers credit for allowing him to go out there and make the mistakes and play and learn, and he will get better, but I feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for anybody in that situation, I do. Now, not a lot of people are going to feel sorry for him for very long, because eventually it's a production business, and nobody's going to care that you're young or you're lonely or whatever. But I think he will get better, and he's learning. And it's tough to do it in a competitive atmosphere where a team's trying to make the playoffs, but I think that's what's happening here. Forever TH says, favorite outdoor game jersey ever in your opinion? Also, what is the matchup you'd like to see in an outdoor game regardless of location? That's a good one. Best jerseys. I really like the Islanders jersey from the Stadium Series over at Yankee Stadium. Although I'm not that big of a fan anymore, I still was kind of impressed by the Kings jerseys when they played at Dodger Stadium that they still use on occasion now with the two-tone gray and black. Those were some that kind of jumped to mind here. I'm not a big fan of that Avalanche jersey, not at all. I did like the Dallas Stars jersey in their Cotton Bowl Winter Classic back on the first of the year. And as far as the matchups, I've been saying it on this podcast and elsewhere, I think the Winter Classic for next year, since we know it's going to be in Minnesota, I think for it to be the Avalanche, I think would be a fun experience. It's a divisional matchup, a lot of firepower there on Colorado. I think I'd love to get them a chance to play together. I know people say Winnipeg, but I think you'd get a little bit more bang out of it to being able to bring in Colorado and promote those Stars in North America. As far as other outdoor matchups are concerned, I don't know how much there'd be an appetite for it, but if you're able to find some way the Panthers and the Lightning can play outside, I know it's difficult in Florida, but hey, if the Kings and Ducks are able to play at Dodger Stadium, maybe you can make something, happen down in Florida. Maybe they can play, over at the Dolphin Stadium or something. That might be fun. Just different things that, teams that don't normally get the opportunity to play in a Winter Classic. We've seen just about every matchup you can think of, but those are some of the ones that it would be kind of unique. Artemi Panarin Stan account says, Don, in your opinion, what would be a realistic return if Georgiev's Rangers are likely to receive from another team? It's interesting because I think Toronto is the best fit. Now, there's a Darren Drager tweet that actually Leah Hextall called to my attention earlier today. This is about from 15 hours ago that Drager tweeted this. The Leafs among the teams that have inquired about Rangers goalie Alexander Georgiev, no offer made. New York needs a lot more to move him. That's interesting because we were just talking about San Jose. Can San Jose put together a package to attract the Rangers to send Georgiev 3,000 miles away? I don't think they do, but there have been reports about they're putting together a major trade between Toronto and New York. Now, Toronto's a little bit escalated as opposed to the Rangers. Rangers are not a win-now team. I think Toronto may be. Just fired their coach, a team that certainly can make the playoffs. Haven't been out of the first round in over a decade. So they're probably in a situation where they want to win now. The Rangers could afford to be a little bit more patient. The other thing that Toronto needs to do is they need to lessen the cap hit with all the money they gave Marner and Nylander and Matthews and the money that they actually gave Tavares to get him away from the Islanders. They don't have any cap space. Now, I don't think that the Rangers can get a Marner. Could they get a Nylander? Can they get a Kapanen, who I think would be a nice fit for the Rangers? So you're talking about the Rangers maybe trading a Georgiev and Smith that could help the blue line for Toronto, give them the backup goaltender they desperately need so that Anderson's not playing every day. And then maybe you get a Kapanen, which would be a nice offensive player that the Rangers can use. Now we're talking, but it sounds like the Rangers aren't giving Georgiev up. See, teams are going to look at Georgiev and say, we've got the Rangers here. They got to get rid of a goaltender. They have an extra one. One goaltender's their future. The other goaltender's got a no-movement clause. Georgiev's expendable. We can get him on a steal. Rangers have proven, even with the Elias Anderson situation, that they want to be patient. So they may wait and hold out. If Toronto's going to have to get a backup. No offense to Hutchinson. He's not winning big games for them down the stretch, you wouldn't think. Georgiev has proven that he can. All right, not on the playoff level, but he's proven that he can win big games. He's beaten Toronto. He's beaten the Islanders. I mean, he's faced a lot of shots. He's had great moments in his very brief career. I think he'd be an excellent goaltender to back up Anderson and a goaltender that maybe can win a couple of playoff games if need be, if something were to happen to Frederik Anderson. So I would be all on board for a trade between those two teams, but it sounds like the Rangers are thinking, be patient. We don't have to give him up for nothing, and we will try to hold out for the best possible deal. I think that would be awesome if the Rangers can pull something like that off. I think it would be tremendous. All right. Chris brings up a great point that I wanted to bring up yesterday, didn't get a chance to do it, or Wednesday. Says, hi, Don. What surprised you more last week? Brad Marchand shootout flub or Austin Matthews no-look stick flip? I'm going to retweet the stick flip, and you guys can look at it at your leisure. For those of you who didn't see it, I'll try to describe it as a borderline play-by-play guy that I am. Puck's in his own zone, sticks loose, stick is right at his feet, he skates beyond the stick, then flips it back to his teammate without looking. The guy is just amazing, and anybody that watches that maybe is not a hockey fan wouldn't be able to appreciate that, but just knowing how difficult that is to do, to pick up a stick, throw it up where it's catchable, no look, a guy that's 10 feet behind you. Chris, great job bringing that up. That was an awesome piece of video, and I retweeted it if you wanted to check it out. Check it out during the course of your day. All right, big weekend coming up. Obviously, we're getting later and later in the season. This will be the final weekend before the All-Star break in St. Louis. So teams will play this weekend, play up until Tuesday, and then we'll shut down for 9 days as we get ready for the second half of the season. So we're looking forward to that. So we got a lot to get into, because when we get back on Monday, that will be kind of moving day. Big weekend, and then we kind of settle in for what we're going to be when we get out of the All-Star break. So Monday, we'll have EJ Raddick on from the NHL Network. We'll break down the weekend, kind of get you set up for where the standings are. You want to talk to me, the best way to do that is at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. As you can hear, I've got kids, so I'm always sick, so we're fighting through this, but we're getting it done. So we'll talk to you again on Monday. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.